Okay, so I'll get started. This is Beth Dean with Toshio Inahara at his house, and we are recording an oral history interview for the Washington County Museum on October 24th, 2011. So Toshio, can you say your name for us? What is your name?
Dr. Toshio Inahara.
Okay, and can you tell us where and when you were born?
I was born in Seattle, January 9th, 1921.
Okay. How did your family come to this area?
Washington County?
Washington County.
Well, we lived in Tacoma, Washington. As my memory goes back to about 1924, although my parents lived there from about 1919. And we moved from Tacoma to Oregon, a place called Hillside, out in the country west of Forest Grove, in 1931.
And what did your family do in Forest Grove at the time?
Oh, my father decided to take up farming. And he was entirely unfamiliar with farming. His main work was, he was trained as a confectioner, and he made Japanese confections, trained in Japan. So he had a business in Tacoma, had his own store, but he decided to forego the business to raise his children out in the country, and that was the main reason why we moved to Oregon.
What were his experiences like as a new farmer?
Very difficult. He was not a farmer, and he had to learn by experience the hard way. Fortunately, he had a friend who lived in Banks, and he was the sort of a guide that led us to move to Oregon. And so we rented a farm in a place called Hillside. We rented about 30 acres and began growing strawberries.
Was it common to grow strawberries at that time? Were there other farmers?
Yes, strawberry was raised throughout the Banks and Forest Grove area. There were many farmers, and most of them farmed berries, but also other crops, you know, like potatoes and cabbage and cauliflower, things like that.
What are some of your earliest memories of being on the farm and living in the Forest Grove area? Or is it Hillside?
Hillside. Uh-huh. Yeah, Hillside's about 6-7 miles out of Forest Grove. Mm-hmm. Well, the main change from Tacoma was living in a very primitive, under primitive conditions. We had no electricity, and our running water was from a tank by gravity flow. We had to heat by wood stove and cook by wood stove too. So things were quite different. Of course, being on a farm, you had an outdoor lavatory, and we had to get our groceries by going several miles into town, and so it was quite different. We had initially we had very few playmates, And of course, I had three brothers at the time, and then later, my youngest brother was born in Forest Grove. Mm-hmm. So we experienced an entirely different kind of living from the city. And of course, we adapted to it by necessity.
I think in the previous interview, you told I think Lisa about your experiences as having a baseball team.
Yes, our school was a one-room grade school, and we had about 30 students from first to the eighth grade, with one teacher. And since I was interested in baseball, even in Tacoma when I was a boy, we organized the baseball team with whatever players we could gather from the 30 students. So we ended up with three of my brothers being the main part of the team. I was the pitcher, my brother was a catcher, my other brother was a shortstop. So we recruited other kids and even had three girls in the outfield. And this was our baseball team.
Were you good?
We were very good.
Okay.
We managed to play home and home games with other grade schools, which was Thatcher and also Gales Creek. And we did well. We managed to win most of the games. Uh-huh. And, but it was a lot of fun, you know. The grade school was had a large playground. It was at 2 acres. At the one end was the school, the other end was the church. So in between, we had a wide playground. And we also had a play shed because of so much rain here, we had to play indoors, you know.
What other, how can you describe the Hillsdale Forest Grove area at that time?
Well, it was, of course, it's all farming, and mainly dairy and prune orchards. And so we got jobs picking up prunes in the fall, and this is the way we earned our little expenses for school, like buying books, clothes. You know, we would go pick up prunes after school hours.
Now, we've been doing some interviews, and we were told that there was a Japanese school in Forest Grove. Is that something you're familiar with?
No, the school was in Banks.
In Banks, okay.
Because there was quite a number of farmers in the area, and so the school was held in Banks, and it was only once a week on Sundays. The teachers came from Portland, and although we had one teacher who lived in Banks, but there were probably about 30 to 40 students.
Did you attend that school?
Yes. My family, my brothers and I went to school on Sundays. And I would drive from Hillside to Banks, which is about 6 or 7 miles.
How old were you when you were driving?
I started driving actually when I was 10 on the farm. And and that was by necessity because my father was, not a very good driver, and he also had a hard time driving a truck. So I had to start driving, and by the time I was 12, I was driving nearly everywhere, right? And, without a license. But at 12, I did get a license, saying that I was 16, and so I did have a driver's license. But later, of course, I had to retake the exam and give them my right age.
Okay.
But this was by necessity.
Yeah.
So I felt it was justified to help the family. You know?
Sure, sure. What other memories do you have of the Japanese, was it called the Japanese school?
Yes.
What other memories do you have of the lessons or the type of activities that you participated
well,
in?
Well, extra activities at school were annual picnics, and this was held mainly after the berry season, probably in July. And we would have picnics and outings at places like Romer's Rest, that was in Tigard, on the Tualatin River, and at Gales Creek. There was a park on the Gales Creek stream. Uh-huh. This is a outing that we all look forward to. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it was pretty routine school, and although I must say we weren't very diligent in learning Japanese. Uh-huh.
Did your family have traditions that they continued to keep alive? Sort of in the Japanese tradition, or how?
Oh, yes. My parents spoke Japanese, so that was the language at home. So we our customs were all Japanese. As a matter of fact, while we lived in Tacoma, when I started grade school, I could not speak English, and I had to struggle for the first year or two. Even had a tutor for English. Then I started high school at Forest Grove. I was there for the first year.
For the first year.
And because the nature of the farming berries, we had to change land. So we moved from one place to another after 3 or 4 years. And we eventually moved from hillside to Laurel View, which is south of Hillsboro, and so I had changed schools to Hillsboro High School because of that, and then later we moved to Helvetia, which is still in the Hillsboro district, but so we moved around the valley several times.
Mm-hmm. Was that so the land could? So you had more nutrients in the land that
yes,
you were farming?
Yes, after 3 or 4 years, the berry plants, you know, the production is down, and so we have to start with the new plants and new land. Yeah, we took our berries to initially to banks. And sold them to a company called Bodel and Company, and I used to watch them process the berries, and at that time, all the berries were packed in 50-gallon barrels with sugar, and these were then refrigerated. Later, as when we moved to the Hillsboro area, we took our berries to, at that time it was called Ray Maling, and subsequently it became Birdseye, and that's when they started freezing berries.
Okay. What year was that?
That was about 19... 34, 35. Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
And when we moved to Helvetia, that was back in 1936, and we remained there until 1942.
Now, can you describe how you learned about the attack on Pearl Harbor and what you remember that time to be like?
Yes. To go back a little, in 1937, for the first time, we had a great crop of berries, and we paid all our debts, and we were once again solvent. So we had purchased 5 acres of land just outside of Hillsboro. And on this property, we built a home in 1941. And the house was just being completed for occupation in December 1941. And my father and I were at the house cleaning up, getting ready to move in. I remember that Sunday afternoon, it was a nice warm afternoon. Our neighbor across the road from a fellow by the name of Bill Phillips, who was a dairy farmer, he came over to tell us about the Pearl Harbor attack. And we were just stunned. We could not believe what had happened. And of course, being farmers, being out of touch with the news around the world, we were entirely aware that something like this could happen. But at any rate, we moved into our new home in January of 1942, and unfortunately, we lived there only for 6 months. We had to move out the 1st of May. And during the period from January to May, of course, we were restricted in our travel. We met all kinds of prejudices, and we were not allowed to travel after dark. Nearly every day, I drove to Portland to the one of the federal offices to seek a permit to travel, as we wanted to move to Eastern Oregon. And the order came out that the Japanese ancestry people had to move east of Highway 97. So of course we found a place that we could move to in Vail, and we were very fortunate in obtaining a permit to travel. Very few permits were issued, and as I recall, I think only 3 or 4 families were given permits. So on May the 2nd, 1942, We loaded up our truck, big truck, with all the furniture and whatever we could load. And then I drove the truck with my brother.
Do you need to get the phone? No problem.
Hello? Yes.
Okay, I think you were explaining. Where were we?
We were moving. Yes, you know we had so much prejudice and so much hate that we faced that we were afraid to drive on the main road to Eastern Oregon. That was Highway 30 that goes through Pendleton. We elected to go on the back way through Bend and Burns. So we left, as I recall, about mid-afternoon, our truck loaded, the cars loaded, and the whole family, and we started driving toward Bend. I also loaded the truck with a 50-gallon drum of gasoline for fear that we would not be able to buy gas. They would not sell it to us. And that, fortunately, that didn't happen. So we arrived in Vail the following morning about 6 a.m. And because the there were two other parties on this property that they had leased, we moved on to Ontario. And found a house immediately, and actually it was a building that was used as a chicken hatchery. It was one big one long building that was about, I'd say, 50 feet long, and it was right on the highway. We rented this place and made our home out of it. And immediately after we settled, we began working as farm laborers. And we worked for a year. When we left Hillsboro, we left our farm. We, at that time, that was like I say, in May. My father had 90 acres of strawberries at that time, and the crop was ready to harvest. We had put in all the expenses and effort to this point, and we had to walk away from it. We lost everything. So we were broke, and we had to work. And so the whole family worked together, and to meet our immediate needs. But after a year, we decided to begin farming for ourselves, and we managed to rent a place just north of Ontario, it's about 7 or 8 miles, and began farming.
So this is Ontario, Canada now?
No,
Ontario,
Oregon.
Oregon, okay.
Yes, that's, it's right on the Snake River.
Okay.
The farming there is entirely different than farming in the Willamette Valley. It's all irrigated, and crops are different. They were growing potatoes, sugar beets, and onions, things like lettuce and celery. So our farming had to change entirely. We had to learn all over again. But we managed somehow, and we expanded our farming to about 60 acres in a couple of years. And at that time also, because of the war, it was difficult to buy equipment. And we were very fortunate and able to buy one new tractor. And we looked around at for used equipment and was able to get by. So we ended up buying a John Deere tractor and a Caterpillar tractor, plows and discs and all kinds of equipment that was necessary. And so from 1942 to 1944, I was pretty much in charge of adulthood, of farming and marketing. But during that period, my younger brother decided to go back to school, and he enrolled at the University of Michigan. And the following year, I wanted to get back to school, and I applied at the University of Wisconsin and was accepted. But because of the responsibility of the farm, I was very hesitant to leave. And not until the very week before school started did I decide that I would go. At that time we had like 60 acres of farm that was in crops, and I wasn't sure that my father and my younger brother could manage. But nevertheless, my father encouraged me to go, and so I left for school and did not return for 3 years. But my family did well. My brothers took over. So I did come back after graduation and worked during the summer before enrolling at the University of Oregon Medical School. I was very fortunate in being accepted. So that started my medical career. One of the factors that I chose this career was that when I first enrolled at the University of Oregon, my father suggested that I become a lawyer. However, for the first year's schooling, I noted that the sciences were my favorites. So that factor, and also the fact that during the war, I noticed that everyone was being drafted into the service, regardless of what their occupation was. And so I thought, you know, being a physician you could be a physician in civilian life as well as the military. So those two factors made me decide that I would go into medicine. And I'm very pleased that I did, because eventually I finished my training and practiced here in Portland.
Can we rewind a little bit and ask you about how do you think your family was able to get this permit? Because it seems like you've had a really exceptional experience during World War II as Japanese.
Well, I think the reason was that I think I met the criteria for the issuing the permit, and that we were able to pinpoint a place where we could relocate to. And I had made the application and repeatedly checked with them about their regulations, and for some reason we were fortunate in getting this permit. And as I say, the only three other families were able to get this, and we moved about 3 days before all the Japanese population in the valley here were placed into a holding camp. It was at the livestock pavilion up in North Portland. And that's what it was, livestock holding pens. And from what I've heard, all they did was put wooden floors over the ground where the livestock had been kept, and I guess they partitioned the rooms with drapes, and the whole Portland community, the valley people, were herded into this camp, and they stayed there until about this is in May, until about September, October. Then they were transferred to Idaho, to Minidoka.
So because your family was outside of the Portland area, did the sort of your geographic location exempt you from that, having that experience?
No, there was no such exemption. It was inclusive. All Japanese people were heralded in.
How did your family, it sounds like your family escaped that experience, though.
How did we escape?
Right.
Well, because we were able to move.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I think it's just because I made a greater attempt to do this, whereas others did not. Mm. Yeah.
At that time, did you have news or word of what was happening in Portland? Were you aware of the other families being put in the livestock pavilion and taken to Minidoka?
Well, we knew we were going to be placed into camps, prisons actually, but we didn't know when, the dates. So, as I say, we were restricted in many ways, and everyone had to abandon their business, their livelihood, lost everything.
Now, when the war ended, it sounds like you came back and were in medical school at that point.
Mm-hmm, yes.
How did your family transition back to life? Did they come back to Washington County, and how did they do
that? Yes, my father and mother came back in 1945, after the end of the war, and they lived in Hillsborough in their home. During the war period, we rented the house to a couple who we knew, and rented this four-bedroom house, two-story, beautiful new home for $35 a month. Yeah, and they looked after the property, of course, and so my parents moved back from Ontario. The farm in Ontario, my brother stayed and continued. And to this day, one of my brothers is still in Ontario.
What changes have you seen in the county after the war, or your experiences coming back? What was the atmosphere like?
Well, I think it was certainly less hostile. Although, you know, I was pretty well isolated being in school. You know, medical school, it was a very demanding. I had no time, except perhaps on a Saturday evening to, you know, to be away from my studies. So I was pretty well isolated from the public, you know.
Do you have other memories that you'd like to share from that time? other things you think are important for the museum to know about?
Well, I can certainly say that from my boyhood until the present, Washington County has changed dramatically. When we came to Portland back in the 1930s, TV Highway through Beaverton was a narrow two-lane road. And there were farms all along this road, even in the town of Beaverton. I recall Beaverton consisted of a few stores on Main Street, and the north side of TV Highway were all farms and farmhouses. And then beyond, a little north of that, was an airport where small planes would come in. The other road that we used was the what's the name of this road over here?
Hall Boulevard?
Oh, Cornell.
Cornell, okay.
Cornell. We used to come in on Cornell Road, and this was also a very narrow two-lane road. No, there's nothing but farms on all the way.
Mm.
And so to think of that as Washington County was just all farms, it's such a dramatic change now. It's hard to believe. Yeah. You know, just to come to Portland, you know, was really a big trip for us to come to the big city.
Mm-hmm. Did you have other families that you reunited with when your family returned to Washington County?
Oh yes, my parents knew a lot of families that from before the war and so. But the farming community in Banks really did not. Go back to the number of farms that they had before the war. People just didn't come back.
Yeah. Now, you said that your family had rented the house for $30 a month. Were they able to get the house back then?
Oh, yes.
So they had a...
Yeah, we owned the property.
Okay.
So...
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Yeah.
Excellent. And seeing your daughter's artwork has been really great for the museum. Do you have anything that you'd like to say about that, her paintings?
Well, I'm very pleased that my Sharon especially has taken an interest about art, the past and what's happened to the Japanese community during the war and post-war. In that regard, I have tried to keep ties with our relatives in Japan, and I have taken all of my family, my children and my grandchildren, to Japan to visit, so that they would at least know and what Japan is like, and also to make contact with their relatives. Of course, they don't speak Japanese, and it's very difficult to teach and to retain foreign language here in the States. As I say, you know, when I started grade school, I was unable to speak English because I had spoke only Japanese. But fortunately, to this day, I'm still bilingual. I keep in touch with my relatives by phone very quite often.
Mm-hmm. Neat. What part of Japan is your family from?
Oh, from the central part, mainly from area Nagoya.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I'm still in touch with my maternal side and also my paternal side. So there's and they have come to visit me here.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Good.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Yes. Yeah.
Has it been difficult to talk about this part of life, this experience with your children and grandchildren, or is this something that you share with them?
No, I share them with them whenever I can, but the curious thing about it is that my grandchildren are not, they don't seem to comprehend what had transpired, and they don't seem to be curious as to what we experienced. And I think it's sort of human nature, because when I was growing up, I never questioned my parents of their past. And of course, you look back on that and say, you know, it's really too bad that you didn't think about talking to them about their past. Perhaps it's the nature of young people that they don't think about the past, they think only of the future.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, sort of as a final thought, what you think you'd like to share with young people about Japanese internment, what happened during World War II, if there's some sort of final message or something that you'd like to share.
Well, I think that I think like any other country, people who might immigrate from say from Europe or other foreign countries, Japan included, they tend to forget their culture, and as the generations progress, they lose even more, and so they know very little about the history, very little about how their predecessors lived and survived, what they did. I suppose this is inevitable, but it's a maybe a recording of history is probably a good thing if they would refer to it, you know. Mm. You know, because my grandchildren certainly cannot speak the language, and my children speak a little and understand more, but I think they're losing the culture.
Well, thank you for sharing with us today. If you have any final thoughts, we're happy to have them.
Well, I think it was a great effort on the Washington County Museum to do this kind of thing. Appreciate all of your efforts to record the history of the Japanese in this county. It's a great thing.
Good. Well, we're happy. And we will send you a copy of the interview so you can have it for your family. And
sure.
Of course, you're always welcome to come to the museum and
yeah,
we can
thanks.
Do that for you.